Happy weekend, everybody, and welcome back to the podcast whose sole reason for existence is to remind you that this world is full of mystery, deep magic, and incredible miracles. And my guest this week, Julie Grimm, is kind of a cool magical mystery herself. I'm always trying to get scientists on the show because I find the intersection between science and the numinous, science and the mystery, science and the what's it all about, to be absolutely fascinating. And Julie's fascinating herself. Besides for having a master's degree in biology, she's also a painter and has written and illustrated a children's book. And then she talks about her journey to where she is now, a professional guide and healer within the modern mystery school. All right, let's get into it. I just know you're going to want to hear Julie's stories of magic. And frankly, they reminded me, once again, that magic and miracle can appear when we least expect it.
One time watching a movie, not a spiritual movie, just a movie. One time driving down an ugly part of the highway with a gray sky. And then, you know, what can only be described as for me, what I would, the face of God through the sky. And I'm just crying and crying and crying on this highway to basically a physically ugly sky that I'm having, you know, the spiritual vision of the face of God, and just like, so beautiful, you know, and then an hour later it's gone and it's just a memory again. So I'm at core a spiritual guide, but I am a multi-business owner and I love art. I'm a painter. So there's that artistry side, but I would say my calling, my vocation in life is to guide people spiritually. So that's the core.
Okay. And when did this begin? Like when you were a kid, did you have any idea you'd be doing what you're doing now?
Absolutely not. So I always joke, and it's not a joke at all, that was not on my, what do you want to be with it when you grow up list. When I was a child, you know, when I was a child and I'm like, oh, what kind of career, what would I do? What I want to study for spiritual guide. Not only did I not want to do that, but it wasn't even on my like realm of what's possible. I didn't know one could be a spiritual guide, but even if I did, I don't think I would have chosen that one for myself. Actually, I really vividly remember we were doing like palm readings, which I guess now it's kind of funny because that's how I was trying to divine my future career, was through the words and the letters I could read on my palm, which maybe does set me up. I never put that together that I, the spiritual guide, she was already using her intuition, but I've always loved to draw and paint and write. And so I saw AI, author, illustrator. So that was what I wanted to be when I grew up, when I was really young. And then later I actually went on to study biology. For me, that I think it's twofold. One, it was like, oh, you know that you can get a career from that. It like, it goes someplace. Author, illustrator feels pretty vague.
Yeah.
Pretty ambiguous. So I was like, okay, we can study hard and get a job, which, right, that's the kind of mentality that I was drilled into. And so I actually have a master's degree in biology. And it was shortly after graduating from my master's program, I was traveling through India. And yes, I had a spiritual awakening. I will be one of those white women traveling through India. And it just happened. Okay. And so that set me on the course of seeking spiritually, trying to understand what had happened to me and decipher that, and eventually go on and receive training to become a spiritual guide. But if you had asked me even 10 years ago, I would have looked at you like you'd lost your ever loving mind.
Hey, thank you for that answer. So there is a method to my madness. So I am going somewhere with this. Forgive me. When you get a master's in biology,
do you have to pick a certain aspect of biology to study, or like a concentration? Or, okay, what did you study?
So I also got my degree, totally makes sense, from Israel of all places. So my ex-boyfriend is Israeli. I moved to Israel. He was doing his degree program. So I did my degree program at the same time. And I had interest in doing, you know, PhD, master's, PhD. So the way it's set up in Israel, I think, might be slightly different, or Europe in general, might be slightly different from the US. In Israel, and to my understanding, a lot of the like more European countries, the master's is an opening to the PhD. You very rarely go directly into a PhD. You do like a master's to PhD, where if after the first year everything's situated, you go into PhD. So the way that it worked is I actually applied to the school, but more to a lab. And my admittance to the university was actually contingent upon the lab admitting me into the lab. Did they have the funding? Did they want me to do it? So the bulk of my degree, which was about 2.5 years, was lab work. So I did about 40 hours a week of lab work, plus my course studies. And so I'm like basic biology. I was studying, interestingly enough, the fusion of two cellular membranes. I mean, it sounds kind of crazy now, but it's not trivial for two cells to connect. We could think of like a fertilization here, or even like the placenta, or even when we get a virus, that's how the virus sneaks in, is that it manages to open up and connect with our cell membrane. So basically the cells are like, nope, we want to stay intact. So we looked at how that has happened. And I specifically looked at two neurons repairing after injury. So that process is not, you know, necessarily, first of all, it doesn't always happen in every neuronal system. And then we were looking at exactly how is it happening.
Okay. I have so many questions, but that's another podcast.
Our science nerds. Yes. That's what I was doing.
Nerds. Well, I mean, I grew up reading science magazines, love science so much, but then now have a master's of divinity. And so those two kind
look
of
at you. Yes.
Seemingly disparate, you know, kind of ways of thinking about the world or approaching the world, you know, how do you marry those things? So obviously we've very briefly talked about what you're doing now. In your mind, is there a cognitive dissonance between the two? How have you managed to find, I mean, or if you even have, you know, to bridge that gap?
It's funny. So as I started to, so I was working in a biotech company back in Boston, and I was had this recent spiritual awakening. And at that point, the cognitive dissonance was enormous, most of all for my identity and the way that I saw the world. Because essentially, as a scientist previously, my worldview was this is it. And I started to realize I had been asking science to answer actually spiritual questions. I had been looking and disappointed by science's inability to answer them. So as I was having the spiritual awakening, it was sort of like, oh, there's this other world. It's not make-believe. It's real. And I had had a physical, tangible, felt experience of the spiritual world to the point where I couldn't deny that within my being. So that's where I was like, okay, even though it's not convenient, even though it's spinning my worldview and knocking it upside down, I need to honor that experience that I had. But what ended up happening, I went and received training to teach meditation. And my meditations often brought in a lot of scientists. Because I was working in the Cambridge, Boston area, huge biotech and tech community. And so we'd lead these meditations and I was being guided. I don't often script my meditations. I basically receive the meditation script while I'm leading it. And it was like, we were going into the oxygen transfer in the blood. We were looking at the wavelengths of light and how gray doesn't actually exist. We were looking at the motions of the planets and like the orbits of the sun and the star. So it was actually very physical, but from a spiritual, there was this added component of the blood is more than just a physical substance and breath is more than just simply a physical substance. So there was this way that even through those meditations I was leading, I was learning about, oh, this is how spirit is coming into the physical. This is how we connect in. This is this bigger map of what's happening as you know, we as humans, the Earth is in motion right now. We're all flying through space-time around sun, which is flying through space-time itself around some other bigger orbit. And like, that's insane. And just breaking down these kind of narrow-mindedness things that I had within my mind.
That's so interesting. You know, I was reflecting on this morning that, you know, my family, who I love very much, they are definitely in the world of black and white concrete, you know, and it is very difficult being the person who's kind of no one else understands and thinks is kind of strange and a weirdo. And it's really part of kind of having these experiences and stepping into them and saying, okay, I'm having a valid experience. Why, how, you know, my science brain is like, why and how? But then to kind of be in a world that doesn't give legitimacy or, you know, that might be prone to saying, you're exaggerating or, you know, you're a liar. It can be heartbreaking. You know, how has that journey been for you?
One of the things that I've had to keep coming back to, as I also started to embrace my path, my unique path, which was also my unique calling, is believe yourself. It's like believe in yourself. But the formula for believing in yourself is to first and foremost, believe yourself. So if you're constantly, you know, having what I would call revelations, and there is actually a writer who maybe you've read or maybe you'd be interested in checking out, Eliphas Levy. He's a French metaphysician, but he talks a lot about faith and science. Actually, he has a whole book and all he's talking about is faith versus science. And I kind of feel like maybe he was really struggling with that himself. But he has a quote, you know, revelations must be believed. So we have these downloads or we have these moments of epiphany or eureka or insight or a mystical moment. And that's beautiful and wonderful. We want to treasure and honor that, but we need to believe that it even happened. And what I came to within myself is to dismiss that is to not believe me. And that is, and then we talk about the bigger piece of believe in yourself, believe in your dreams. Well, if you don't even believe the dream, if you don't even believe yourself, you're not going to get there. So it was a matter of, it is acceptance of what's not going to make sense logically to other people. For myself, you know, I'm happy to share here on the podcast. To be honest, I don't talk about them very frequently with other people. I do feel that they're a bit sacred. I don't feel that even when I put them to words, I do it any justice. Yeah. Because it's like, it's this experience that's beyond, it's beyond the words, it's beyond the mind. And, you know, again, ancient people, they would use glyphs or they would use symbols to express something beyond words, because words are actually a fairly dense form of communicating, and there's always something lost in translation there. And when we come into like symbology or even like myth or metaphor, we can start to get into this higher realm or art, for example, or music or dance. That's where we can get a bit more into what I would call like almost an archetypal energy, where we get into the actual experience versus me trying to tell you about the experience.
Thank you. Thank you. I, again, have 30 questions, but we must move on. I want to circle back to your comment about the blood and, you know, that. And then I see on your bio that you're a color consultant. And yesterday I went and had a blood draw. And this, you know, it was so fascinating. I've never had this happen before. The tech was like, oh my gosh, the color of your blood is beautiful. And I said, what? She's like, it's so beautiful. Look at this red. And I thought, I mean, I've never thought of that before, but thank you. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, well, sometimes I draw blood and it's black. You know, it's more of a black color. And I thought, you know, with my kind of scientific, but also metaphysical mind, I was like, dear God, what does that mean for those people?
Right. So
I don't know if that, you know, you work with color, you reference the blood before. Does any of this tie in together?
I mean, so color is frequency. Color has a frequency. And I would also be curious about this woman. She might be having some psychic sight happening there too. It can even happen with smell where you're like, somebody just smells off, but I'm not sure it's physical. So obviously there's a physical component. Blood, most of the blood pumping through our system is blue. It's only red at certain times. And so it's red when it meets the oxygen in the air. So it's always red when we see it, but a large part of the blood internally is actually blue most of the time, or like a bluish purple. Right. And so we think of red, of blood being red, but that's only true externally. Internally, it's a different color. And so then we could look at color being frequency. Red and blue are kind of on opposite ends of the spectrum in terms of a frequency perspective. And there's other like symbology. I study the Kabbalah, perhaps you're familiar, which goes a lot into, actually has quite a lot of correspondences with color, where red is very much like that Martian energy, whereas blue is more like the king on his throne. Mm-hmm. And so we can start to draw parallels there and go a little bit deeper into it. But I would say if somebody's blood looks black, it's probably not a great sign. Probably not a great sign. Yeah.
I always think about, I don't know how old you are, but part of the kind of, I don't know, I would say protocol to get us to not smoke when I was growing up is they would show a picture of a lung that was just black. And they would say, this is what your lungs will look like if you're smoking. And so she said yesterday, you know, their blood is black. And I thought, are they smokers? I mean, is that what's going on? I don't know. But I thought it was interesting based on, you know, you being working with color and to ask you that question. Plus, with your science background, fascinating.
Yeah.
So the second question I ask everybody is, did you grow up in a religious household? If so, what did that look like? And, you know, if it sounds like you believe in source still, how has that kind of relationship evolved over time?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. I was raised Catholic. We went to CCD Sunday school. But at some point, I remember very vividly being like, I don't believe in God. I was like, that's a nice thing. These adults seem to believe in it. And they seem to be happy because of it. But I just don't have that belief. And so that was part of probably what drew me even more into science again, because whether I don't think I would have said it this way at the time, but in hindsight, I was looking to fill a hole. You know, there was an absence of God in my life. And so I was looking for answers about reality. And I thought science is going to answer these questions, which it can't. So part of my spiritual awakening, I didn't go, and there's a God. I went, okay, spirit is real. What's that all about? And so that's where I started to meditate. I started to train within the Modern Mystery School, which I'm still certified through. And that's where my training comes through. And eventually I went, oh my gosh, it's not that I don't believe in God. I'm pissed at God. I am real angry. And I've been holding this deep, deep, deep anger and resentment towards God, basically a how could you? Mm-hmm. And that caused me to go, never mind. I'm going to let you go now. Yeah. Can you relate?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I had a period of time. I moved down to Florida for a few months to help my friend who was going through what at the time was experimental brain surgery for Parkinson's. So I stayed with her for 2 months. It was a two-part process, 1 month to Gainesville to get it inserted, the second month to get it turned on. And I had, it was 2010, beginning in January, I started crying every day. I mean, every day for no reason. I did not know what was going on. It was bizarre. And I was so worried about it that when I left in March to go be with my friend, I thought, they're going to think I'm crazy. I don't know what this is. It could be 5 minutes, 10 minutes. It would just hit me out of the blue. And I thought I was going crazy. And then I was at her house one day. I think going to bed for the night or whatever and crying again. And all of a sudden I had this vision of Jesus in a lotus position. And I'm a panentheist, but Jesus came, was a vision. And he said, basically, or that energy said, look, you want to stop crying? Just say you believe in me. Mm-hmm. And he didn't mean Jesus or the Christian faith. I got the sense he was saying, that energy was saying something larger than you. Like,
yeah,
you have to seed your belief in your will and your being in the world, being the ultimate authority. You need to understand there is something larger than you, an energy that just is so much vaster than you. You have to acknowledge that it exists. And so I was like, whoa, what just happened there? You know,
an energy that loves you.
Yes.
And that's just pure love and forgiveness.
Yes. Yes. Well, I am stubborn and annoying. And, you know, I was like, okay, whatever. And so then the next day I was crying again. And I was like, okay, what would it cost me to just say, okay, and mean it? I mean, if you stop crying, it might be a win.
Yeah.
And so I did. I capitulated. And my God, I stopped crying the next day. It was like all that sorrow and all that grief disappeared. And, you know, it was kind of this inception point in my life. And I thought, okay, you know, and then I went on, right? Because, you know, my friend couldn't eat. She couldn't walk. She couldn't. So it was a heavy caretaking role. So I had that experience. And then you put it away while you're doing the rest of life. Mm-hmm. But I think of it as the initial knock on the door possibility. And sometimes you go through these experiences, and when you don't have anyone else around you to catch you or hold you, it can be really isolating and very lonely. Did you have that experience, or did you have, you know, a group or a family of some sort to kind of, I don't know, mentor you or to create a container for you to feel safe?
So that's what I started to seek out. So I had my spiritual awakening and I was like, oh gosh, this is real. Energy's real. I don't know what's what any longer. And I moved back to Boston and I started to seek. I was seeking out. I didn't even really know what I was seeking because it's never really a door I had opened. I kind of knew, you know, religion, that wasn't for me. I didn't feel a religious draw. What is it going to be? So I started meditating and I met my meditation teacher. And that's where I was like, okay, there's something going on here. I'm liking this. And she is a spiritual guide within the Modern Mystery School. So I was like, okay, what's that all about? There's some crazy cult stuff online. I was like, I'm not sure I want to touch that with a 10-foot pole. She seems lovely. Okay, we'll keep going. And so I kept working with her. And eventually I was like, okay, like, what have you got? Like, we had built enough trust where I was like, what have you got? Because I need something a little bit more than what I've been doing. And since then, I have a very large spiritual community that I'm part of. The Modern Mystery School, I think it's in like 52 different countries. It's insane. We have a pretty good local community here in Boston where there's many, many people coming and going. They've definitely been super helpful. It's not that anybody can know your path for you or tell you which way to go. But to your point, when you're having those moments of doubt or weakness, or you just want to share with somebody, it's crucial. And there's certainly been moments. I mean, I have one friend where I'm like, oh yeah, like you talked me off of a ledge. That was a pretty strong ledge. I don't know what would have happened had you not been there, you know? So I do think community within this is really crucial, whether it's, you know, I love my books. I love reading. I do feel connected to those authors, even if they're no longer living. But having a living tribe, it's just sort of next level. And then I've continued, you know, I have teachers, I have mentors, my own guidance system where they keep me in line. Because let me tell you, it's easy to get off track. It's easy to get distracted in this world. There's just so much information constantly. And so I find them, like their leadership to be helpful, but then their support just is amazing. And the clarity that they're able to bring helps me. And then, you know, in turn, I help my community. So it's just this kind of ladder of light, if you will.
I am into the ladder of light, and I'm so glad that you have a community and people to support you in that way. And near the end of the podcast, we're going to talk about the work you do now, because I watched this insanely charming movie/YouTube video on your website, and I thought, oh my gosh, this is so charming. And just the thought, the title and the thought, but I'll get to that in a little bit, because
okay, perfect. I'm looking forward to it.
I'd love to ask the main question of the podcast, which is, you can share one story, two stories of something where you feel like you witnessed or experienced something magical, miraculous, or mysterious.
Oh goodness, where do I start? You know, that is what set me on this path, was that I had what I can only call a spiritual awakening, where, you know, it was like my crown chakra, which I thought chakras were metaphors. So I'm using all these words and people are like, yeah, that's a thing. That was not a thing for me. It wasn't like I was, you know, a metaphysical scholar. I was a scientist, an atheist. Okay. I was aware. I had done some yoga. I was aware that chakras existed, but this was like deep end of the pool. Okay. So my crown chakra opened, like literally light flew into my being. And then I saw this massive picture. Well, I connected. I felt that I was one with everything in the world. I dissolved my personal sense of boundaries and became one with the world and literally everything in the world. And I as well saw, I had this vision of humanity as like children playing in a sandbox. And we were building up all these structures. And I realized like, oh, it's just play. Oh, we're all just playing here and it's all just earthly stuff and it's going to get destroyed anyway. But like, why aren't we just having more fun with it all and being more creative? And then of course, you know, the epiphany moment was done, went back in, and I had been traveling through India, as I mentioned. So I went back, I moved, you know, a week or two later, I came back to Boston, got my first biotech job. And meanwhile, I'm looking around with these eyes that are seeing from a very different perspective, because it's like I had shifted my lens. So I'm seeing the same old, but from a vastly different lens. And it's like that sense of, oh, well, we're all one, but not here. And we're all one, but not here, and 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 not here. And I started to just feel, I mean, what an immense amount of pain, so much suffering, because I had this vision of unity and oneness, and then direct lived experience of absolutely no unity and no oneness. And that's what really set me on my path to begin with, was like, I have to make sense of this. Like, what is this all about? What within me? Because a lot of those blocks to the oneness were also, they were internal. So what within me needed to be let go of, dissolved, released, healed, forgiven, cleared up? And that, you know, we're still going, girl. It's, you know, we have not stopped. But it is very interesting, because I've had other epiphany moments since then. That was about 12, 13 years ago. So since then, I've had other moments, and they're always different, and they're never expected. It's never when I expect it to happen. You know, it's not when I'm like in deep trance meditation. I mean, I get wonderful, you know, guidance and things then, but you know, Jesus coming to you, I've had other, you know, masters of light. I've had Jesus come to me too. It's not while I'm in prayer and meditation. One time watching a movie, not a spiritual movie, just a movie. One time driving down an ugly part of the highway with a gray sky. And then, you know, what can only be described as for me, what I would, the face of God through the sky. And I'm just crying and crying and crying on this highway to basically a physically ugly sky that I'm having, you know, the spiritual vision of the face of God, and just like, so beautiful. You know, and then an hour later it's gone and it's just a memory again. I was like, okay.
Those kind of moments of noetic experience are, again, one of those things where you say you cannot describe them to other people. They're just so far beyond. And unless someone has their own personal experience, it is literally impossible to explain those feelings and the experience, I guess you could say. I kind of, I just am like, wait, why while driving? You know, I mean, that's so dangerous. I mean, she's trying to drive and she's crying and she needs to watch the road.
It wasn't heavy traffic, at least we'll say that. It wasn't heavy traffic, but.
Okay, good. Yeah. Well, I think it really illuminates the idea, the concept, the reality that those energies that we can't define, they will show up at any time. You do not have to be in a church. You do not have to be in a mosque or a synagogue. You do not have to be doing meditation. They're always looking for an opportunity to connect, you know, and I kind of think of it as this, and it goes back to your work in biology, right? The membranes touching each other, you know, that membrane of that, you know, protects or, you know, kind of encapsulates or holds our dense reality is butting up against another membrane. And you could say, what is it? Another dimension? Is it, you know, another reality? Is it the multiverse, which is just millimeters away from ours? They're touching and there's an exchange, you know, hopefully it's optimal. Hopefully
yeah.
A good exchange, yeah. But I see it is so beautifully going back to the work that you did when you were getting your master's degree, and here you are again. You are at the edge. You're on the threshold and you are uniting these two. You're kind of a bridge or you have permeated the beautiful reality of that world.
I got to hire you for this is 100%, you know, but I never thought of it in that way. So thank you. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I just wish you lived closer. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. Right. Come visit.
Yes. I wanted to ask, because you work with color, and color is so, I mean, it's so quietly powerful. People just don't think about it in that way. I mean, we are surrounded by color every day. The clothes that we wear, the colors that we wear, I mean, they can, you know, transmit who you are. If you wear black every day, all day, if you wear red or you carry a purse that's gold or whatever, color communicates. Let me ask you, I'm putting you on the spot a little bit. Do you think what color is the color of unity? You know, the entire, this feeling of being connected to everything, does it have a color?
It's a really good point. I mean, without being too trite here, I would say it's probably white. Okay. So here's what's really interesting. So I studied color theory. So that's the mixing of light. What we see is the reflected light. So pigment is different than light. So if I were like a light engineer of a play, I would be creating colors very differently. So when we mix pigments together, we mute the color and we it goes towards brown, basically brown or black. Like a white shirt means that you have no pigment within the shirt. White light means you have every ray of light. So it's the opposite, which we learn metaphorically, as above, so below, but reversed. Through the glass darkly. There's a reversed thing here. So white light is every ray of light. White pigment is no color. Black is the absence of every ray of light. Black pigment is every color. So when we mix pigments, it's the opposite of mixing light. When we mix two rays of light, we get a third distinct ray of light. When we mix two pigments together, we only get what the Venn diagram. We only get their overlap. Where the two colors have anything in common, that's the color that now we see visually. So, and I actually started to think about this actually in the terms of DNA, because we have physical DNA and we have spiritual DNA. And you can think about this when a couple brings a child into the world. Physically, they're kind of like a Venn diagram of where the DNA overlaps. We get a mixing of the physical, but spiritually, we get a full new being. They're not really a mixture of either parent, you could say. They're a being unto their own. pretty much we make something totally new. Physically, there is a mixing happening. Spiritually, bam, we got a new flavor of the rainbow came through. And actually light operates very much the same. So the symbol of unity, it is, I would go back to that image of the prism. So you have like a ray of white light flowed through a prism, now separates that ray into every color of the rainbow. And so white light really is, I mean, as lame as it sounds, or light, you know, in and of itself, as lame as it might sound, I would say is the color of unity, because it is every single ray of light. It contains every ray all together.
I have to tell you something. I have been thinking of the phrase as above, so below during our entire interview. So the fact that you brought that in is blowing my mind a little bit. And then I've always really been captivated by the phrase through a glass darkly, because it says so much with so few words. And it's like, oh, it's almost like a Zen koan. And you can just like sit back and you're like, what does this mean? And like take 20 years to like figure it out. I think what's particularly provocative about what you said about being in darkness and that being an absence of light is I've always felt an affinity for being in the dark or twilight when there is less light. And part of me feels that that is because the light that is during the day is dissipating or disappeared, and I don't have to process so much stimuli. And so I can then kind of not be overwhelmed, I guess, for one thing. The other thing, it just feels like that moment of twilight or dusk or the moment of the night allows me to go outward because there's less kind of stimuli. It's definitely a great time to dream, that's for sure. And I just had a great dream last night, as a matter of fact. I woke up this morning and I was like, what does this mean? But I love the light, and I understand that it holds all colors, but I really, really love the dark, because it just feels like there's another threshold there where you can access, I don't know, other energies, other people, other ways of being. It's the dreaming time. I don't know. How do you feel about dreams?
First of all, I love dreams. I love that we're talking about dreams. I'm upset. I'm borderline obsessed with dreams. I have a fun dream. I was doing a very expensive program. I was like, oh my gosh, I have to pay all this money. How am I ever going to get that money? I'm never going to get that money. This is crazy. You know, stretching me, let's say, stretching me big time. I had a dream, literally the moon, Luna appeared to me and was like, you have $30,000. It's fine. And I was like, what WTF? And then the next day I woke up and I realized, oh my God, I do. I had this other account that I know it sounds crazy to say I had forgotten about it, but I was like, cause it was like savings. And I had literally forgotten about it. And I was like, oh my God, I have that other account. And the moon just literally told me, yep, this is how it's all going to be solved. And I'll often have very prophetic dreams that will guide me. I've made career decisions based on dreams, dating decisions based off of dreams. And they've always led me the right way. But to your point about dark, you know, the dark is not a villainous state. And you probably know the Bible significantly better than I do, since you have a master's in divinity. But I was like, out of the darkness, we came the light. We started in the darkness. That's the primordial soup from which we all come. So it's a very creative space. There's nothing, it's not evil or bad. It's simply dark. And it's interesting because today is a full moon. Did you know that?
Yes, I did.
It's our full moon day today. And I often think about the dark as, to your point, the time where we can have the dreaming, where the internal or subconscious material that's a bit hard to access can actually come more to the foreground and more to the forefront. And for me, it's a bit like winter, actually. I actually really like the winter time where nature is quieter. It's colder. You're not as active. There's way more time for those like introspective moments. And I call winter nature's night. So right now we're in nature's sunshine and winter is nature's night. And so it's that the darker time of the year, which I love. So absolutely.
Me too. Beautiful. Beautiful. I'm like, what do you mean it's dark at 5? I think that means I need to get into bed. Okay.
That exactly. Right time away. For the reading, time for the coziness, the snuggles. Yeah.
It's amazing. Soup.
I'm a big I do. I love soup. I'm all about it.
Thank you for that response. First of all, gorgeous. You and I are like kin or family on a lot of things. I appreciate it. I would just like to tell everybody how enchanted I was about the, I don't want to call it the premise, but the way that this kind of YouTube video on your site introduces you is really charming. And I thought to myself, oh my gosh, it's like, your friendly neighborhood, I was like, oh my gosh, friendly neighborhood. Like you could put so many words there, spiritualist, like wise one, just like so many like dreamer, visionary, all of these things. And I thought, oh my gosh, wouldn't it be divine if on every block there was someone like this holding space and creating magic in their part of the world, so I just, please, would you mind describing the work that you do? I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, sure. So I work with people predominantly one-on-one, but also in small group classes. The core of what I do is to help them remember who they really are. So I teach, we talked about God already. We teach about God. Again, I came to the work as an atheist. So you're welcome here. Of any faith, any religious creed does not matter. And it's more about connecting to that eternal aspect of you, that spirit, that light that is who you are, the true self beyond the masks, beyond the shoulds, beyond the learned patterns, the coping structures, all those things that basically mask the true self and get in the way of the expression of who you are. So that's the core of the work that I do. I'll do a lot of one-on-one energy healing sessions. So something called life activation, I do quite often as a first step with somebody. It helps plug them back into their spiritual blueprint, which again, it's the spiritual DNA. It's the light of who they are. So we all have these programs running from our parents, from our upbringing, from our education system, stories. And to the extent that they don't have to do with who we truly are, they're actually impeding us from that expression. So I often talk about it like we're going to upload the operating system, but we're uploading from spirit, because otherwise otherwise you're working with an operating system from when you were five. And it's like, that's not going to cut it. And that's to a degree, I had my spiritual awakening, but part of what that did for me was I started to see behaviors that I was playing out that I was like, this isn't who I want to be. Why am I responding this way? Why am I acting this way? Why do I keep making that same mistake? And it was because I had a program running from childhood that I just never upgraded. And it's not going to upgrade unless you take the time and energy to upgrade it. So the way that I see this is through the energy healing, we can upgrade those systems, but not through the mind of Julie, because frankly, it's not good enough. Not through anybody else's, but through your own spirit, because that's really the only thing that we want to truly upgrade from. And and then bigger coursework that helps give you tools where you can redirect yourself real time, expand that container, first of all, to serve the self. And then from that to better serve, whether it's your clients, your family, your community, what other work you're involved in. Because if we're, again, playing out those patterns, we're really not at full capacity. And so I want to help people get to that full capacity where they can step into the higher work that they feel called to do. They can manage their day-to-day existence, but now with that higher lens of, I'm a spiritual being here, and this is a spiritual task that I'm involved in. And that is a broader path. There's a higher coursework. Again, I mentioned I study within an ancient spiritual lineage, 3,000-year-old lineage. So this is not something, again, I created, in my backyard. This is coming through a much larger tradition. And somebody, if they wanted to go on and continue studying how to be an energy healer, meditation facilitator, and much more.
Yeah. And I think it's would be good if we all reminded that this is a sandbox and that we should be doing more playing, you know, quite honestly, I just want to let you know that I have so many questions for you. Like, I thought about M theory and brains and how they're trying to prove possibly that, you know, this universe came into being through these two membranes colliding, which is like such a big thing. But again, it goes into that idea of thresholds and connection and what happens when we bump up against each other or two cells bump up against each other. And I was thinking about your comment about the virus, you know, trying to go through. And I thought, oh my gosh, that virus is just like M theory. It's trying to create a whole new world in another cell so that it can replicate and become something else. And I mean, I've been thinking about as above, so below. I've been thinking about how everything is just absolutely, it follows kind of in my mind, and I could be totally wrong, you know, maybe the way the universe did come into being is two membranes touch each other. You know, we certainly have, you know, you as an example of you're here in this reality, dense as it is, but you are able to go across the membrane, or that membrane is permeated. Yeah. You know, there are lots.
And it's a sperm and an egg. That's two membranes fusing together, which is how a new soul is brought into the physical world.
Yeah. I mean, I think life is being created everywhere. And all I thought was, oh my gosh, your program, what you're involved in, you are going to create so many people who are on their blocks, wherever they live on the world, you know, lifting other people up and bringing beauty and abundance to so many. So thank you for the work that you do.
Thank you for that reflection. That's my goal. So if people listening, if you would like that, you know, that's what I'm here for. That's what I'm all about. And we, to your point, like we need the community and we need the helping hand. I certainly could not have done it on my own, nor really should I. Why? That's not how it works, right? Yeah. We're a spiritual family. We're a spiritual community. We're here to lift each other up, to share our wisdom, to share our gifts, and to be a support to one another.
Me here wrapping up this conversation with Julie Grimm. So grateful to her for sharing her stories and opening up about what her journey looked like from scientist and still scientist to someone who traffics in the numinous. Please do dive into the episode show notes. You know, there's going to be a lot of incredible links in there so you can get to know Julie better and find out what kind of magic she's creating in the world. Thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like Julie. Understand that in this world, it doesn't have to be either or. It can be both and. You can traffic in science. You can discover things in the universe that interest you, whether it's math or dolphins or study the stars. And then a part of your heart can also be intrigued and captivated by the mystery of it all. You don't have to be either or. You can be both. You can understand that there's an underlying science to everything, that things can be mathematically understood, can be examined and comprehended, and then shared with others. But you can also live in the mystery and understand that some things are beyond our comprehension, and that is also super captivating too. So be like Julie and live in both places. I mean, it's really brave, frankly, and we need more people like that. And you know what? I'm waiting here, along with a whole lot of other people, for you all to show up like that. So yeah, come join the club. Be into science, be into math, be in discovery, but then also jump into the mystery.